Hey, my name is Lindsay Anderson.
And I'm Ellen Flannery Schroeder.
And you're listening to The Great Estate, a podcast about parenting.
We've got 6 kids and 2 PhDs in psychology between us, so we mostly know what we're doing.
Yeah, but not all the time. When our children throw us a curveball, we fall back on some basic parenting principles that are known to promote healthy and happy kids.
So that's what we're going to talk about today. Strategies for navigating difficult moments and keeping a sense of humor about ourselves.
And our kids.
Okay. So I've really tried to serve as a model for emotion regulation for my kids by sharing with them when my emotions are running high and I'm struggling to manage them, keeping in mind that I only do this when it's developmentally appropriate. So if it was some emotion that, it wouldn't be the emotion that would be different. It would be maybe the situation that was inappropriate. Anger at my husband, for example. I don't share those feelings with my kids, but stress at work or anger with a colleague and sort of managing that, I always try to share a little bit of it, and not just my emotion, because I think that just trains up your kids to talk about potentially negative emotions.
Or understanding and identifying emotions.
Right, so it's good for that, but you can't stop there.
Mm-hmm.
So beyond that, what I'm really trying to do is let them know the different strategies that I tried to be able to manage the emotion, you know, whether I was, you know, had to sort of step out. If I was upset with a colleague, maybe I had to take some time, step out of the room, or take some deep breaths, or talk it out with the colleague. Whatever I did, I really tried to talk with my kids about different strategies, elicit from them some suggestions, potentially, and go about it that way, as opposed to sort of keeping those emotions under wrap all the time, which I think sometimes parents think is maybe the preferred thing to do.
Yeah, I agree. I think that learning how to monitor your own stress and your own emotions in front of your children, even if you're not doing it explicitly, gives them you know, the template on which to develop their own repertoire of responses to big feelings. And it's not just anger and sadness, but it is things like feeling stressed or feeling overwhelmed or lonely and frustrated, disappointed. I mean, all of these other often more complex feelings that at younger ages they might not understand if you were to label them. But watching you work through them is something that they can internalize and can sort of model back to you.
Did I tell you about the time that my kids were yelling at each other? I'm sure. I hardly remember what the triggering event was.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm pretty sure
I have no idea what that's like.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure somebody was yelling at somebody else, which led to me yelling at them about how no one should yell. And I was really losing it. Mm. I was really upset. I remember we were all getting into the car, and I got into the car, and I was still kind of yelling and carrying on about why no one should yell. And as I was saying that, it occurred to me that I was yelling. And in that moment, I became hysterical with laughter because I realized how ironic it was. So I'm telling that story to
demonstrate how appropriate humor is in managing emotions.
Well, yeah, but that actually wasn't why I was bringing it up, but rather that you don't always have to model effective emotion regulation. Sometimes you're modeling how you don't do it well, mm-hmm. acknowledging after the fact that, hey, I didn't handle that so well. You know, I'll try to do things differently in the future, apologizing.
Mm-hmm. To recover from the poor coping.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Because kids need a model for that too. Mm-hmm. They're pretty good at dysregulation, but not so good on the recovery.
Yeah, that could be any night in my home where I lose my mind over something. And then it is, in fact, my strategy to find humor in that, because humor is such an amazing mechanism for managing big emotions when you can access it, if you can sort of step outside of the big emotional moment and recover and sort of laugh and comment on the fact that nobody's handling the situation well and what else can we do?
Right. And that we all make mistakes when we're trying to recover.
Yeah, I don't see my kids doing it so much using humor, but, you know, maybe if I model it enough, maybe if I lose my mind enough and laugh about it and bring them back from it, then maybe they'll be able to do it as they get older. I don't know.
I think so.
I actually thought for a long time that the idea of transition objects was one that was sort of an emotionally regulating strategy for only little kids.
So can you talk for a minute about what a transitional object is?
Yeah. So things like my youngest, and actually every single one of my children has what they call a softie, but I know the other families who call them lovies or binkies or babas or
pee-pee chick.
Or yayas.
It was pee-pee chick in my family. It was a chicken.
Yeah. My nieces had yayas. And they're these sort of loved up stuffed animals or objects. In fact, I know somebody whose daughter adopted a dish towel. And it was the dish towel that was the transition object. And every time that there was their child was experiencing an emotion, it is the object that sort of brings comfort and soothing to that child. So my youngest has... Well, actually, I should start with my oldest has this softie, and this softie evolved from one softie to two softies because he had to have a backup in case original softie was dirtier
Absolutely.
In the wash or out of commission. So we have original softie and backup softie. And then we sort of figured out which softie was going to then be sort of passed on to my middle daughter. And my youngest daughter has the luxury of being last and having all of the other discarded softies that we attempted to sort of adopt with my other two children. So she has this entire, like, menagerie of softies that she carries with her everywhere. And each one of my children has taken those softies to their first day of school, to kindergarten. I find them stuffed in my children's bags.
Pee-pee chick went to college.
That's exactly where I was headed, that I think about those things as being really effective strategies for younger children in managing emotions.
Well, I'm just thinking that at some point,
you're talking about the longevity of softies.
Yeah. So that at some point, they probably need to stay at home.
It breaks my heart, really, because I love watching them tote those things around. But you're right, they do.
They need to transition to more mature forms of coping.
In addition to softies, my children have all sorts of other strategies that they think and actually probably do help them manage big emotions, although perhaps not sustainable over the long term. But things like Band-Aids, lots and lots of Band-Aids, and
yes.
ice packs. My children, for every possible big feeling, if they could go and get an ice pack for themselves or for each other, that is a powerful tool.
It's a balm for all kinds of problems. Speaking of balms, how about technology use as an emotion regulation strategy? So I'm not endorsing that, but I hear that from a lot of parents whose children come to them and say, Mom, I really need to play video games when I get home from school because it helps me to relax. So what do you say to that?
I say, if that's the only thing that you have that helps you relax, we have to talk about other important skills to help you manage big feelings and stress.
I mean, my response to that is, yeah, no.
It's distraction, really. I mean, that's not emotion regulation. That doesn't help to solve anything or understand anything or sort of grow from an experience. That just sort of distracts from what's going on and learning how to. And you can't carry technology with you everywhere, so that's not a transferable strategy.
And it's a procrastination technique, too,
That's
right?
True.
There's something that I prefer less, and so I'm going to do the more preferred thing first. It's just not a great skill to develop across time.
Mm-hmm.
You want to do the less preferred thing first, followed by the reward, which is the more preferred video game playing.
You're making me think that Band-Aids aren't such a bad problem.
They're not. And they do have magical powers.
Some of them do, right?
They do, yeah. This might be a little afield, but I think another great strategy, and I'll connect the dots for you, but is practicing generosity. So again, it's sort of relating to not seeking support from others, but offering support to others.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll tell the story, and then hopefully why I'm raising this as an emotion regulation strategy will be clear. A few years ago, we were approaching November, December and I was going through the drive-thru at Dunkin' Donuts. And I was by myself, not really, you know, in my own thoughts. I had ordered at the little speaker, and I drove up to the window and, you know, pulled out my wallet to pay, and the cashier said, "The person ahead of you paid for it." And I was like, "What? What? You know, did I know the person ahead of me?" You know, and I'm straining to see who it was. I didn't know who it was, and I hadn't paid particular attention. But it was, I was so incredibly moved by that simple act of kindness. And of course, I went home and I told my family about it. And my daughter was like, "Let's go to Dunkin' Donuts," because of course she loves donuts and she wanted to pass it on. And so now we can't go through, you know, Dunkin' Donuts without buying for the people behind us. But the mood shift, so you could be having the worst day possible and quite literally, you know, the price of a donut or a coffee, which is not a whole heck of a lot of money, buys you such incredible mood enhancement. Mm-hmm. It's really surprising.
Mm-hmm. And I don't think it has to be just monetary. So it's lovely that you were able to do that and be on the receiving end of that. But there are so many ways that you can give to other people to experience that type of perspective.
And certainly in those instances, my daughter feels the
effect,
power of generosity.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm always like, I try not to make eye contact with the people that I bought the coffee for. But my daughter, she has no problem, you know, turning right around in the car looking, because she wants to see their reaction.
Absolutely.
And always they're waving wildly and saying thank you. And, you know, you just never know how a small act can really improve somebody's mood.
Mm-hmm.
And your own.
Mm-hmm. And you never know what's behind the feelings. So when kids have big feelings, you can't just assume that those feelings are sort of coming out of nowhere. You know, the feelings are being driven by other things like, you know, hunger or fatigue or you know, any number of different interactions that they might have had with people at school or, you know, wherever. And I think that the more that we can encourage our kids to take perspective and to think about things from other angles.
You're leading into my absolute favorite strategy for regulating emotion, which is changing your perspective on a situation. So no matter what the situation is, you can always ask yourself, is there another way of looking at this? This summer, my oldest son came home from college and his girlfriend came to visit him. And we went out for breakfast one morning. And we were a large group and we went to a really popular breakfast place. So there was a very long wait. We were waiting and waiting, cramped in this little tiny space for easily half an hour, going on 45 minutes while we're waiting to get a table. And my son's girlfriend said, "You know, I really don't mind waiting because it's giving me the opportunity as the waiter and waitresses walk past to see all of the options. And so I'm going to know exactly what I want to order for breakfast." And I thought that was just the perfect example of how you can find the good in the bad always. And if you can remember to do that in life,
then you are going to be A-OK. So what did we cover? We talked about four basic strategies for managing emotions. Strategy one, model your emotion regulation strategies in front of your kids. As it's developmentally appropriate, let your children see you work through difficult... So what did we cover? We talked about four basic strategies for managing emotions. Strategy one, model your emotion regulation strategies in front of your kids. As it's developmentally appropriate, let your children see and hear you work through difficult emotions and use strategies to shift your mood. It's okay if the first attempt doesn't work. Model the process of recovering, revising, and trying again.
Strategy two, use humor. Even when the going gets tough, Don't forget to inject a little humor as you help your children to manage emotions.
Strategy 3. Transition objects can help to dampen the intensity of big and acute emotions. Things like softies or band-aids or ice packs can help young children to navigate their way from intense feelings to greater calm.
Strategy 4. Change your perspective. It's often the case that a small shift in the way one looks at a situation can make a big difference. Using humor, helping others, and looking for the good in every situation can help to quiet even the most difficult emotions.
I'm Lindsay Anderson.
And I'm Ellen Flannery Schroeder.
And you just listened to a Greatest Eight podcast written and produced by Drs. Lindsay Anderson and Ellen Flannery Schroeder. Associate producer and engineer was Ian Reyes.
For more information related to parenting for mental health, or to listen to podcasts on other topics, please visit thegreatest8.org.
That's thegreatest8.org. These podcasts were developed by the University of Rhode Island and South County Health, with support from URI, the Rhode Island Foundation, and the Van Buren Charitable.